Hey, welcome back to the Coughable Podcast. I mean, infamous podcast. I'm just leaving it in, Daryl. Your cough is there.
Really?
Yep. It's for prosperity. We're on a time frame, buddy. So we actually just recorded a whole podcast while we were just talking shit about stuff. So here we are to actually record the podcast. This is episode 425. Have you ever seen what a cannonball can do to a samurai? So we're obviously talking about Shogun. Well, we do because we just watched Shogun, and now we know what happens.
I have a question.
Yes.
Did we see any of this cannonball-ish dismemberment in The Last Samurai?
I don't know.
It's been so long since I've seen that movie.
I'll be honest. It's been so long since that I've never seen that movie.
That you've never seen that movie?
Yeah. It's like the one Tom Cruise movie I've never seen.
Oh, it's amazing. It has Ken Watanabe in it. It has what's his name?
Masioka?
Sonata in it. Hiro Sonata in it is in it too.
Oh, Hiro Sonata. When you say Hiro, I thought you were talking about Hiro from Heroes.
Yatta!
Asa! How he says it, whatever. Anyway, welcome to the show. Daryl, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
Cool. Your Michigan Wolverines did not quite do as well in basketball as they did in football this year. And for that, my friend, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just saw on a message board where they said the end of an era. One JH left after bringing it all, winning it all. Mm-hmm. And then one JH was left after basically burning the house down.
Yeah. Well, when you're fighting other teams' players and your own trainers, that's not really a recipe for, here's the thing. If you want to be
Was not other players. It was the other coach.
No, there was a player. There was a player too.
No, the player got in the way of him trying to smack. Well,
whatever. He threw a punch and hit a player. But yeah, not a recipe for keeping your high paying, prestigious college football job. So is all I'm saying.
Oh, and also threatening to kill another coach.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that too. So, So Juwan Howard, get some help. Maybe take a vacation. Don't ever coach again. Stay away from kids.
Although, let's be honest, John Chaney did the same thing against when he was coaching at Temple, and he said that to John Calipari, which was really hilarious.
I mean,
I still remember that.
Is he wrong for saying that to John Calipari? I mean, he's the coach of Kentucky now, so I mean,
yeah, they did not do too well.
Maybe we would have avoided some of this had he done that. Anyway,
I know this is
we're gonna go off on a weird tangent. So this week we are talking about Bo DeMeo and Woke on Woke Crime, Invincible season 2 part 2. They really should have called the episode Who's the Biggest Victim Here. There's a Teen Titans live action thing that might be coming. So we'll talk about that for a second, and then we're going to talk about season 1, episode 4 of Shogun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Are you ready? Let's do this. All right. So Bo DeMeo. So everyone in the class raised their hand if they know who Bo DeMeo is. Oh, I see nobody raised their hands.
You need the cricket sound as well.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Add it to the...
You're a victim. You're a victim would work for this guy, too. All right. So Bo DeMeo is the showrunner for X-Men 97, which comes out, I believe, on Wednesday? Or premieres on Wednesday?
March 20th.
Yeah. And so just earlier this week, Disney, Marvel, whatever, decided to part ways with Bo DeMeo. Now, his work at Marvel has been unspectacular. He worked on Moon Knight. He worked on an early version of Blade that got thrown away. I don't think he was the one who did the girls teaching Blade life lessons script.
Yeah. We'll try to be fair with this.
Yeah, we don't know. I will say, this guy is not, okay. So the argument is he got his job because he's a gay black man. The argument is he's lost his job because he's a gay black man with an OnlyFans that they say is non-explicit. So I do not know, because obviously I'm not going to go pay to see a gay dude's OnlyFans. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, he's not, like, other than, like, what he's done with X-Men 97 about bringing, like, modern problems to 1997 issues, he's been, like, outspoken in, you know, for other things, like, in a good way. Like, so, like, I don't want to necessarily, like, bash him because, one, we don't really know. Two, season one has not fully aired. There's been a lot of clips, and the clips are bad. Like, I will say this. Out of context, what they've shown for X-Men 97 is objectively bad, and it makes it worse that they got a lot of the original voices back and that these people are such whores that they would just read these lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know if you've been like following it or watching any of the clips that go out or anything.
I just
like
watched that, one. But, I watch one clip. So, that's it.
You know, they changed a lot of the character designs, and it's supposed to be like a continuation picking up right where the last one like ended, and like Rogue went full anorexic and lost that booty. What's happening?
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I feel bad for him because I've never seen this happen where like they fired a showrunner as they were about to start doing the like the in-game press.
And again, I will say other than the stuff you mentioned about Moon Knight and the draft of Blade, I don't know anything about him.
Oh, he was a big he was a big advocate for Henry Cavill in Henry Cavill's position about The Witcher, which is ironic.
Oh,
but should still be celebrated. Hey, you do good thing, you get celebrated. You do a bad thing, you get, you know, lambasted. But sorry, go ahead.
I will also say, and I'm taking the quote from this article, what he said in 2022, which is not bad at all as far as when he was talking about the X-Men, how's like we all have a Magneto inside us and we all have a Charles Xavier. A part of us wants to burn it all down, and there's a part of us who wants to find compromise and build up.
Right.
And again, that can go with there's so many characters that are like that where you see, yeah, you know, okay, they're fighting against each other, but you can see both sides of the story.
Yeah.
Or you in a certain time in your life, you feel that. Which
read the first part of that quote though, because the first part of that quote is where he's wrong.
Yeah. Anyone who feels
and the anyone who feels different.
Are you talking about the anyone?
So.
Yeah. Well. Again, I know what he's saying, but this is what people like him say that, or not like him, but people say stuff like that.
Sure.
That literally includes everyone because everyone at any point in time will feel different. It doesn't.
But when he says anyone feels different, we all have Magneto inside of us and we all have Charles Xavier inside of us. I'm going to be honest. I do not have a Charles Xavier inside of me. Like, and I push the Magneto down like he's in a plastic cell somewhere. Like he can't get out. And all of the robots that work with him are made completely of plastic. So there's no chance my inner Magneto is going to escape. But like this is the problem, right? It's like there's lots of people that feel different. And X-Men is a great show for people who are outsiders, but not everyone is an outsider.
Well, this is where I will disagree. Most everyone at one point in time, it doesn't matter if it's real or not. You feel like an outsider. You feel like you don't fit in something. It doesn't mean like in society, in like on this team or whatever.
Sure.
That is not beholden to race. That is not beholden to age or gender. The thing is, when Hollywood says something like this, they are specifically focusing on those three things. Or, well, it's usually just gender and race.
Who do you think he identified as? Like, when he says, like, the comics, the X-Men comics in particular, really helped him understand his identity.
Yeah. How old is he?
I think he's about our age.
Okay, because that's what I was going to differentiate. I'm not sure, honestly, because
I'll find out exactly how old he is. Give me one second. But who do you think he identified as?
Let's see. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, Bishop. Like, I mean, like, gonna, I, you know, I
it's
mean,
it's funny you said that. I was going to say Bishop, and I was like, okay, that's kind of like, yeah, that's like a softball right there.
Well, it's a joke too, but
yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, like, honestly, if depending on who he is, like, he could. They don't have his age, dude. This dude's probably like 50 something, if they're not posting his age. But yeah, so at the end of the day, Disney went for this nostalgia play with X-Men 97. This guy comes in and he says, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it justice, but I'm going to bring modern problems to 1997 issues. And it's unnecessary. And the other thing is the lie that, like, Magneto is Martin Luther King and Charles Xavier is Malcolm X. It is not what this comic or show has ever been about. And well, yes, I intentionally swapped them because Magneto is not necessarily the bad guy. And Professor X is a pervy dude who's trying to get with a 14-year-old girl for the majority of the run of the show, of the comic book series.
So to be fair, again, you might have seen more from what he said. I don't know if he said that, but DeMaio said that.
Yes, he said it. Yeah, he came out and said it. But
okay, so he did say that.
So,
but yeah. Again, it's not even that bugs me. Like, it, you know, because people get that wrong all the time. It's what you said before that, where you're trying to say this show is 97, but you're bringing in the modern problems that are. Again, these modern problems, and I'm using quotation marks, are absolutely fabricated, like as good as well as any other fiction.
Right.
And you're trying, and again, it's like making a movie in the 50s, or like that takes place in the 50s, and then trying to display characteristics that take place in the 2020s.
Right.
It doesn't marry up.
Right.
And but again, that's where these activists are trying to spew their message instead of making a good story.
Yeah, and to be fair, too, he got attacked because the casting of the person who's voicing, and I stress voicing, Sunspot, they went and found a Brazilian actor to do it, but he wasn't dark-skinned enough.
Yeah.
Like, this is what he had to deal with. Like, here's my opinion, or my thoughts. He's in a no-win situation for this show. From the beginning, when he starts talking about, like, oh, we're going to bring modern things, when they start talking about making characters gay or non-binary and things like that, you're just giving people reasons and ammunition to not watch and to bash it without having seen it at all. Now, like I said, all I've seen is the 5 or 6 out of context clips that they've shown. And so far, I'm like, I don't know. I think
I didn't know there were that many out there.
Like, there's a few, like, you know, maybe it's not that many, but I don't know. I watch too much shit on YouTube as it is. Like, we probably need to hold some sort of an intervention for me. But you know, it's all been out of context. So that's why I haven't been like, oh my God, this sucks, because I don't know. Am I going to watch it? I think I still have your Disney Plus on my Apple TV. I know I don't have it on my phone anymore, but maybe I might check it out. But like at the same time, like what I've seen has been like, oh God, I don't really know if I want to subject myself to this.
Yeah. And when you said he was in a no-win situation, that's, again, when you put agenda over content in the sense of storytelling, you put yourself out there. And again, if you were focused on the story and then you got the same flack, you know what, you could be like, look, this is the most important thing, telling a good story. But too often these people are trying to appease, you know, these gods that are what it is now in the sense of identity, you know, and, you know, the message, as Critical Drinker likes to say. You put yourself in paint yourself in a corner, because the people you are trying to appease are the ones that are, you know, have the pitch, the torches and pitchforks, and the people that actually watch the stuff, that have actually watched the stuff, you've alienated by saying all this shit earlier. So that's on you. And again, it's, I'm not just talking about, I'm just talking more in generalization when people are trying to tout this message instead of staying true to what the story is.
Right.
And you find yourself in that position and nobody's helping you because, again, the people you're trying to appease are the ones that want to, you know, string you up. And then the people that would have had your back if you would have looked for the, you know, if you were being truthful to the story, mm-hmm. they're like, screw you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're not wrong. So anyway, so I'm interested to see what happens. This is a very interesting turn of events. I mean, apparently they have two seasons written, so who knows if they're going to keep like their direction of the second season. Oh, in this picture, he has a picture of Nightcrawler on his shirt. Maybe he identified as Nightcrawler. Is he Catholic? I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Are you ready? Moving on?
Yes.
All right. So the other thing, again, both articles this week come from the Hollywood Reporter, because they're actual news and they're both exclusives. So the woman who is writing Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow screenplay, for James Gunn has been tapped to now put together a project for a live Teen Titans movie. I'm really curious about this because, like, I feel like they're going to go the Teen Titans Go route. And this is kind of the podcast we did before we podcasted. Like, they're going to go the Teen Titans Go route, I assume. And the idiots at Screen Rant did a, like, casting thing. And they cast Static for the Teen Titans movie. It's like, why? Like, if you're going to do it, like, do it right. Like, here's the thing. Teen Titans could be a great franchise where you bring in like young heroes and stuff like that. Even if you want to do like something like bring like Static onto the team or something, start with the originals. Start with the original sidekicks, Robin, Kid Flash, Aqualad, Wonder Girl, and Speedy. And then graduate them and just continually make a new Teen Titans movie every 3 or 4 years and constantly have the heroes grow up. Go do their own solo movie or something like that. Maybe build a Justice League that way. Who knows? It could be a good idea. But again, like they're going with this woman who has very limited experience when it comes to writing and any of that stuff. I guess she was in a couple short films and now she's writing two major Hollywood movies, and she's been an actor. She was a series regular on the Michael J. Fox show, and otherwise, she was on something called My Day. It doesn't even have a link in Wikipedia. And then she was in a total of, 19 episodes of Vampire Diaries, The Blacklist, and something called Hightown. And it's like, who is this person? Like, what do they know? You know? I guess she originated the role of Eliza Hamilton in the original Vassar Workshop production of Hamilton. Well, there you go. So, what did you say? Failing upward?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Again, it's as if they have not learned from Marvel and Disney in this regard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. The thing is, and I will make there are always exceptions, people that are exceptionally talented mm-hmm. that come out of the woodwork and knock your socks off with something. However, and again, without knowing anything she's written, really, because it's literally all her being an actor.
Yeah. I mean, the article literally says she's known for acting.
Yeah. Without anything else to go by. And looking at the history in the last several years of Marvel and Disney doing this exact same thing where people have one or two writing credits mm-hmm. and then they give them a $200 million film. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Again, nothing against her. This is you're giving, and I'm assuming this movie would be $100 million movie or yeah, whatnot.
Right.
At least with the effects and everything. giving it to someone who has no writing credits, one writing credit.
Right.
Supergirl. And again, because again, going back to that, doing a Supergirl movie. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah, I'm not really 100% sure.
Because when has this worked out in the last several years with these type of movies someone with limited...
Oh, I have an answer for limited, that. None times. It's worked out none times.
Exactly. So, yes.
I mean, you look at... Virtue Signal and the Winter Soldier, right? I mean, that guy had very limited, you know, experience. What's his name? Where'd it go? You know, I'm talking about the showrunner.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Malcolm Spellman.
Yeah. So well, I was about to say Waldron, but he was in the other.
Our Family Wedding. And now he's writing Captain America, Brave New World. He was a writer on Empire for a couple episodes. He was a producer on Truth Be Told. He did something called Hip Hop Uncovered. And then Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And he's the writer and executive producer for the horrible, horrific Peacock original series, Bel-Air.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing.
You know what we didn't need is a gritty remake of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Oh, my God. Anyway, because it's like a perfect show. Like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is literally like a perfect show. But that's beside the point. Anyway, but yeah, so they pull these people in who do this shit. And it's like, I mean, it's like DC with Tom King. Tom King sucks. Why are you making stuff based off of Tom King shitty titles? Like, yeah. I have zero faith in James Gunn. Zero faith.
Oh, no. It's
like none faith.
I was very, very wary about it when we first talked. Yeah, when we first talked about it last year, I was like, I don't know about this. Yes, he did well in Guardians. He had some good other movies. Slither, producer behind Brightburn, but I don't know if he has the voice to bring this to light. And the longer this is going on, gone on, like my faith is in the negative right now.
Yeah, whatever faith is, I have the opposite of that.
I mean. This is just, I mean, it almost doesn't seem real.
Yeah.
That these massive companies are still, let's be honest, I'm going to just say it, shitting the bed in the sense of the decisions they're making. Like, full stop. That's what they're doing.
Full stop, you're correct.
Yes. Thank you very much.
But anyway, I don't know. So, we'll see. Like, who knows? I think it all depends on which version of Teen Titans they do, which heroes they do. And I think by starting with the originals, it'll separate itself from that very mid HBO Max show. I don't know.
And I will say this, and again, not knowing anything of what she is, I have not heard her say anything really. Right. So, and being a former fan of the Vampire Diaries, yes. I don't want to hear it. I do hope she does the job.
Oh, excuse me.
I absolutely hope she does a good job in this. Oh.
It's my allergies. I'm so sorry.
I absolutely hope she does a good job with this. It's just going by the track record of things like this. They've literally, like you said, they've literally not worked out not one time in the last several years. Not once. Not once.
Not once.
In these movies.
Never, ever. So, anyway, Marv Wolfman is probably really pissed off right now. So, all right. Let's see. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to use some weird version of it. They're going to have, like, Red X in there or something. So, like, Marv Wolfman doesn't get any credits other than the name. Or same with the George Perez estate. But, yeah. Okay. Let's move on, shall we? Invincible's back.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly good.
Yeah.
You know? So let's see. Out of five, it's not so much an Amber problem as much as she's got to be the victim problems. What do you give the episode?
I give it a 3.7 out of 5.
Oh, wow. We were really close. So I'm a 3.8. Overall, so this is episode 5 of season 2. This must come as a shock. I think they did a really good job with the Thraxons and what happened there and rebuilding, and then Mark coming back to Earth, trying to put his life back together, or get back into his life and things like that. I like that William started locking the window. That was pretty funny. But the best part of this episode, happened to be the Guardians of the Globe stuff, being split into two, the A team and the B team. But let's talk about the bad stuff first, because there's really only one really bad thing in this episode.
And it's the lingering bad thing from season one.
Yeah, which they did a good job mitigating for the first half of season two.
Yes, they were. I will give them credit. They actually did.
Yeah,
and that's Amber.
Yeah, the whole like Mark's gone, saving another planet, finding out his dad's still alive, and he has a little brother, and she's like, "Oh well, my grandpa died, and you weren't here to help." It's like, you know what? Fuck off. Yeah. Mark should have just dinosaurused her, and just moved on. I'm gonna go be with Eve now. That I've had enough of this bullshit. So
and this is the thing with the whole Amber character. One, she is Amber in literally in name only, because there's nothing, whether her appearance and her personality, it is nothing like the Amber in the comics.
And she's already cheating on Mark.
Oh, yes.
Because she immediately started texting, dude from Gary from season one, from the comics,
Giving her a little more personality would have been fine. That would have been fine. But of course, the way they did this. Let me stick to this episode. Let me just stick to this episode, because I could get on a whole tangent.
Before you get into the episode, if you're curious about how people feel about the character of Amber in the show, just go to YouTube and type in Invincible Amber. And there are hours and hours of people talking about hate for this character.
Oh, yeah.
So and much better than we would do it, because they care more than we do about hating this character.
Yeah. So. And I saw some Reddit posts from over a year ago where they said, hey, we were fine with her being a little more, having a little bit more depth, but and then point after point of why she's a terrible character, or why she's just terrible. So again, you have someone that is someone you care about is telling you all of this stuff, right? About what's happened to them. And you know that it's weighing on them. And then you throw in, well, this happened to me too. So, it sucks. I kind of get where you're going. Really? You're going to do that? Even if it's important. Don't get me wrong. Because, her grandfather dying. Yes, that's important to her.
Right.
Does she have to bring that up right there? Because it comes across as, well, I had a bad time too.
It wasn't so much the fact that my grandpa died statement. It was and you weren't there for me. That was the problem.
Yes.
You know? And it's just all she does is make Mark feel guilty and cuck him out.
Yeah, man. It's...
So, all right. Let's talk about the good stuff from this episode. Mm-hmm. How about that? So Mark comes back. He introduces Oliver to Debbie. That went about as expected with this version of Debbie. It's gonna be really interesting to see, how
is she gonna do a Catelyn?
I think she might. I feel like she might, because I think you have all these people who don't have families writing this show with Seth Rogen, and don't want families and just want to do drugs and masturbate all day. I'm really interested to see what they do. But it's also interesting the way Mark reacted to Cecil. He was a little more militant which I mm-hmm. feel like is probably closer to how he should have acted the first time. But it was, it's just the changes that they've made there that kind of make some of the decision-making hard, and like the way Cecil acts like, oh, like nothing's ever been wrong here. Let's just like, we're here to help you. And it's like, they're never going to trust him, you know?
No.
But yeah, I think the other, so going back to the, like the Guardians of the Globe and the GDA, the Donald stuff that picked up from the end of episode 4, where he realizes he's just a brain in a mech, was pretty freaking cool. Yeah. Seeing the White Room for the first time in the show was really cool. Or I guess it wasn't the first time, but I always enjoy seeing the White Room. And I loved when Donald's like, wait, I have access to the White Room. And he's like, not all of it. So that was pretty cool. And then the B team of the Guardians of the Globe fighting the Lizard League was so much more brutal than the comic. And it was great. Was great.
Yeah. And I think sometimes this show, particularly in season one, some of the brutality is over the top in a way that is to shock.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things that were not necessary in that fight, but overall, like, that was a pretty damn cool fight.
Yeah.
And I mean, really cool. And it showed it gave it. That's the thing. I think a lot of, you don't see a lot in comics or, you know, shows, except probably anime.
Yeah.
Is when the heroes are in real trouble and getting their asses handed to them.
Well, did you think for a second that shrinking ray was going to explode dude's head when he, that's how she died in the comic, or he, well, in the comic it was a he, they made it a she for this, which that doesn't really matter. But yeah, like when the big giant lizard guy ate shrinking ray, like it was pretty like, holy crap. Like, jeez.
Oh,
you know, and then the Kate trying to, the desperation in Kate was the coolest part of this, because she kept trying to save, and like, we know something that, like, because of his comic book readers, we know something, but trying to protect the number one. And how she kept trying to just duplicate and duplicate and duplicate. And then when the number one got caught, like the panic, the desperation, it was really, really cool. And then when he smashed the number one and two together, it's like, damn, that was brutal. Like, you know, and it's left with her like gasping for air as she dies, like just basically the two versions of her, like, smashed together. This was the best Rex episode we've had. I think that someone told Jason Mantzoukas to calm the fuck down.
I was gonna say that I actually liked his character in this episode.
Rex was really good, especially when we went to meet with Eve. And then speaking of Eve, so Rex went to her and like, hey, you need to go to space and save all these dumb motherfuckers because they can't do this without you, which is true. I mean, like, if they didn't have Eve, they'd all be dead because they were just half-assed, flew a space shuttle up to a giant warship.
Yeah.
The Shapesmith character is annoying. Like, more annoying than in the comic.
I don't really mind him. Like, he is what he is.
Yeah. But I mean, it was cool. It, like, I think it's funny the sequids or however, whatever they call them, when they animate them and there's a whole bunch of them, it's just a bunch of little like sequid eyeballs in like a big, like pink, like blob. When, you know, like Ryan Ottley, like painstakingly drew like each one individually, and it's like, oh, all right. Well, you know, it's animation. You got to move a little bit faster, I guess. But like, I would have loved to see a little more attention to detail there. But I loved that ended on a cliffhanger.
That was pretty cool. I was actually surprised.
They're going to do both parts of this. And, and they're just like, we're going to open the next episode with like a new episode. And like, I think, you know, now I'm excited. I mean, I was going to watch anyway, but now I'm excited to watch next, whatever, Wednesday, mm-hmm. Thursday, whenever it is. And then, there was a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
And, Alan, you know, we learn Alan survived his injuries. And I actually like this little bit that they've added, that Thaddeus decided to turn off the life support and like kind of went full Ivan Drago. If he dies, he dies.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that, you know, well, he knows that with the way Alan was bred, he comes back stronger, very much like a sentient. I was going to say a sentient doomsday. Because he can't die the same way again, essentially. And then he reveals himself to be a Viltrumite rebel. And then Alan's like, I got the guy for you.
Yeah.
So I know. So I'm excited to see this. I'm actually excited to see Alan get captured and become friends with Nolan on the prison ship, which again, spoilers. But I keep watching this show and here's what I want. I just want the Invincible War. With all the versions,
dude, I cannot wait for that. That's all I want. That's all I want for that.
Because like the animation is so good, it really is. The animation, yeah. The animation is great for the most part. Mm-hmm. And all I want to do is see the Invincible War. It's like it's the most right multiverse done right ever, I think, in comics, because it's literally a throwaway multiverse.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, oh, they're pulling some other character from a multiverse to like be Eve forever. But yeah. So anyway, yeah. All right. You want to move on to Shogun?
Yes. So, oh, my show.
Hold on. With Invincible. Definitely go watch it. It's really good. Yes. Like there's very little to complain about with what's been going on for the entirety of season two. All right. Now, here we go. Shogun, it's your what now?
This has been my show so far of, actually not just this year, obviously, because I've only watched two shows, real shows this year, but this would have been my top show from last year too.
I tell you The Gentleman is pretty good too.
I watched the first 5 minutes. I'm gonna watch some of that today too.
So I'm figuring we can do The Gentleman and Masters of the Air like as like just both the full season for both of those when they're done. So because I'm still two episodes behind on Masters of the Air. I didn't watch last week's.
I am too. Yeah.
So anyway. All right. So yes, this is a great show. And I texted you last night when I was watching it. This is my favorite episode of the season. I mean, it's only episode 4 and there's still 4 more episodes to go. But out of 5, what happened to those horses? What do you give this?
Ooh. Peter will not like that. Oh, I give this a 4 out of 5.
Oh, wow. I went higher than you.
Oh, wow. Really?
I went 4.25. Okay.
Nice.
I feel like for the first time, this was like the best story that we've gotten from an episode that was like coherent and not all over the place. With like just trying to world build, the world's been built. So now they can get down to it. This was the best Blackthorn we've had so far. And, this is a story of the sins of the sons coming back on the fathers.
Yes.
So, which is like the opposite of how it should be. And this was the other thing we were talking about is, you know, there's so much cool stuff that happened in this episode. But I will say this, if you are squeamish and you love horses, you might want to skip the end of the episode, but all of this stuff was done with like canon experts and things like that. So like no horses were actually hurt. I think a couple samurai got eviscerated by cannonball fire, but like, you know, they're back in the 1400s. We don't care. but anyway, no, this was really cool. There was a lot of like symbolism in this episode. There was a lot of like this lore in this episode. And then, how do you say her name?
Mariko.
Mariko. I thought was like the star of the episode with like how she took the world that's been built so far and then gave a whole bunch of color to it.
And I have to say, and we said this a little bit last week, but what's her name? Anna Sawa?
Yeah.
Or Sawai? Again, she was our least favorite, pretty much. Well, she was my second least favorite character in Monarch.
Well, Kate was just a bad character in Monarch.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with her acting. It just Kate was a bad character. And
that's the exact point. That's the exact point like I was going to make is in the sense of, again, she was playing her character how it was written, which is fine. Again, she just didn't like. And again, that was the first time I'd seen her in acting.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing her in anything before.
And then seeing her in Shoga, like from the second I saw her on screen, and again, this is also based on the writing too, but also her acting presence, because this is what's important about writing. Bad writing can sometimes screw a good actor. Mm-hmm. In the sense of diminishing their acting presence. And I feel like that's what happened in Monarch, because watching her in this, I mean, she's amazing in this.
Yes.
She is absolutely fantastic. She just
literally owns the screen the entire time she's on it. And like, she chews up scenes in such a good way and adds to them. And like, the thing that makes it is the little facial tics that she does, like the little like sly smile or the little side eye, like that's cool. And then like, I know like when you're an actor, one of the hardest things to do is to know what to do with your hands. And the way she uses just watching her with her hands, cause like the robes and stuff, it would be very easy to just hide her hands, you know, but she's always doing something. Like she's always moving her hands and like, you know, doing whatever needs to be done. But she is like by far my favorite character. And I think that
I absolutely love her this.
And Blackthorn loved her this episode too.
Yeah, he did.
That was
he did.
he taught all sorts of war and penetration techniques this week.
And he was also a little slow on the uptake too, when he was like, oh yeah, I enjoyed the night. And she was like, oh yeah, I'm glad you're consort.
I'm glad you and Fuji had fun.
Yeah.
And he was like, it was fantastic. Thank you. It was, she was wonderful. but no, there's a lot going on here. I really like the politics of the show. Like as far as like the back and forth, like, when they're pulling up and he was like, whose army is that? And they're like, oh, it's, Yasha, Yabushiga. Thank you. His army. And, he was like, well, I hope they're loyal to him. And like, you know, cause you know, how do you say it?
Oh, Toranaga.
Toranaga. You know, he's a wanted man. Like,
oh, by the way, I don't think we talked about this last week, but it's hilarious that both of those guys were in the 2021 Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
Cause I kept looking at the, Yabushiga, and I'm like, who is he? And it's like, oh, he was freaking Raiden in that. Yeah. Because he had it shaved. He didn't have facial hair or whatever. Right. And then obviously Toranaga was Scorpion.
Yeah. So, you know, I rewatched that not too long ago. It's not good. Don't get me wrong. Because the main character is literal Mortal Kombat powers, plot armor.
Plot armor.
But, like, the martial arts and the special effects are fantastic.
Had they not made
literally his power plot armor, we would probably look at the movie differently. Anyway.
Agree.
Again, this show is beautiful. Just like, you know, when Blackthorn's like, oh, there's my ship. Can I have it back now? Where's my crew? Like, and I love how they're all dancing around like, oh, your crew's been set off. They're safe. Dude, they're all dead. They're so dead. Yeah. Like they probably, it's like a Haitian barbecue. They all got eaten, you know, like barbecue rolled into Japan. He's like, let's do this.
Talk about rip from the headline type comment right there.
Dude, I want to
see how it goes.
I want to make a shirt that says, Haitian barbecue. And it's just a leg, a human leg.
Too soon? You have to have that quote, that line, though. We'll just see where it goes.
Yeah, we'll just see where it goes.
Where this goes.
Yeah. Anyway, but no, they did not eat his crew, but they're definitely all dead. Yeah. And then the gun thing was so interesting because it's like, yeah, you have swords. Of course you don't want someone to have a gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when he gives the gun to Fuji and she gives him the swords and just like she's now like she will protect him with her life. Here's the thing. I haven't read the books and I didn't watch the whatever it was, the 1970s or 1980s miniseries that we talked about last week. But like I'm just excited to see like how her character progresses because she didn't want to do this. Like she is, you know, she's, you know, recovering from a trauma, but they all call, I love how they all call him a barbarian and he is by far the most proper person on the show.
Well,
like when she walked up on him on the bath, he's like, oh, you know, he sat right back down in the water.
So I like how I'm glad you brought up the whole Fuji thing because it, think what we were talking about it with Invincible and Amber being a victim.
Yeah.
And how Fuji, you know, she lost her husband. She is a victim. Son. Yeah. And, you know, she's going off on Mariko.
Yeah.
And then she stops and she says, oh, you know what? This is, I forgot what you lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because again, you know, Bentaro got, you know, I mean, we didn't never saw it, but he basically, her, you know, Mariko's husband got killed, like right in front of her.
He got.
So, and watching Fuji realize that after she's like, okay, yes, I have problems, but, you know, this woman in front of me just lost her husband.
Right.
And again, one of the things I mentioned last week was I find it fascinating when you see, you know, different ways of thinking, like, I mean, just that seem totally alien to you. And I've always been fascinated with the tenets of Bushido and, you know, the honor, loyalty and all that stuff. And I really like how Mariko tells, you know, she talks about the title of the episode, The Eightfold Fence, and how from a mental standpoint, no matter what you're going through, you kind of like segment it behind these fences or whatnot. It, you know, Blackthorn can't quite get that because he always wonders, like, all this stuff is going on. And, you know, he's very, you know, not hot headed, but he's, you know, very expressive, very emotional in the sense. But he's coming across these individuals who these crazy things are going on. And one, you know, the culture, like I said, is alien to him, but how they deal with, you know, tragedy, and it doesn't look like it affects them. And she tells him that, like, during while she's watching while it's raining outside or something, and how you can be there but also feel like you're not necessarily present. And I find that a fascinating thing, not just from a, you know, standpoint of culture, but a standpoint of mindset, in the sense of you wonder how sometimes people get through tragedies, and, you know, or people are going through something and you don't realize it because, again, I'm one of those. I find that people nowadays are way too emotional and, you know, aren't. And again, sometimes it's myself as well.
Right.
And not, you know, you say the first thing that's on your mind, or, you know, you have this reaction to something where you're letting your emotions control you.
Yeah.
Instead of stepping back and saying and looking at this something kind of dispassionately or, you know, objectively instead of subjectively and emotionally. And it's a difficult thing to do, but this is one of the reasons I love the whole, you know, Bushido and, you know, this time period in Japan where a lot of that, you know, the whole duty and honor and loyalty goes above what you are necessarily as a person. And, you know, people might not like that, but I find it fascinating.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you bring that up because the end of the episode was the exact opposite of that with the two sons going against their fathers and essentially bringing war to the kingdom.
It's just like, you know, what have you done?
It's like, what have you done? But it's really, again, like, so the cannons, right? The cannons were such a cool metaphor for, you know, power and perceived, you know, value. Because here, You're gonna have to say this again. Yabushiga.
Yeah,
Yabushiga. I keep wanting to say Yobagoya from the league. Anyway, Yabushiga thinks he's in this position of power because Blackthorn is teaching his men how to use these cannons. And I mean, of course, it's Asian math. They're going to be much better at using the cannons. Anyway, but he thinks he has the power. In reality, it's Hamamoto's son who has the power because he set a couple cannons off in the distance and used them.
Yeah.
And in you know, Yagamoto's son, or God, you know what I mean?
Toranaga.
Yeah.
Nagakato.
Yeah, both sons, you know,
yeah,
literally conspired against their dads to, you know, one wants to take power, the other wants revenge for his brother. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and for what they've done to his father. And he's, again, like without thinking, he's acting out. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this was just a really great episode of television.
And I love how you said it. It goes contrary to everything else you see in this culture as far as, you know, that honor mm-hmm. standpoint and looking at things more dispassionately like Toranaga does. And then, you know, you see that fieriness and not thinking ahead.
Right.
Of the sons.
Right. Yeah.
And because that's what this, you know, this, there's been masterful, the watching mm-hmm. the political maneuverings. Mm-hmm. And then you see the sons just crap all over it. But
dude, and just, the cannons, just the visuals yeah. of the cannons and the damage that they did. And knowing, yeah. like, you know, we know in this country, like, how devastating cannons were in the Revolutionary and Civil Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Not just like from ships, but on battlefields. It is. Like to see the carnage of that on an FX show. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. It's a cable show, but this is not a premium cable show like that. It's, you know, it's awesome. Like I can't wait to watch next week.
Yeah. So. And yeah, like I said, I cannot wait. I love the show.
Yep.
I can't wait to see and I'm so glad we still have what, 6 episodes left.
Yeah. I think it's 10.
Great.
Isn't
that's
it?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. That's great. I love it.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, on that note, anything else you want to add?
No, that's it.
Next week, we're all in person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, we are. Oh, I might watch Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I'm definitely going to watch the latest Ghostbusters before next week. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we are doing a review next week. Actually, will mostly be a review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire with Carlo, our buddy from the Real Ghostbusters of Ohio, coming back in. So, but we're all going to go see the movie together. So it should be fun. So anyway.
Should be fun.
Yeah. Yep. All right. You were going to say something else. Sorry.
Oh, no. But I was just going to say, if you're not watching Shogun yet, you got to watch.
Get on it. Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, thank you all for listening. Actually, thank you for all the listeners and downloads we've gotten over the past like month or so. This is awesome. It's exciting to see people enjoying the show. And hopefully if you're a new listener, this is what we do. Thank you. We love you. Dee, any last words?
Nope.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week. Later.
See you.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcast, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Daryl Jasper and me, Brian Tudor. To find more information about the show, visit us at infamouspodcast.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to keep up with the show. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons and are looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. Music for this podcast is provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, Whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.